You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you are in Wausau this morning, listening on WXCO or in the Eau Claire area, listening on 93.5 The Tap, we are glad that you are able to join us. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Another chilly morning across the network, but there's hope. Next week, it's going to start, even by the end of this week, it's going to be milder.
Oh, like how milder are we talking? I try not to look at these things because, well, you know, it's disappointing.
Jamie, I need any thread of hope I can hang on to in these trying times. And, you know, so I know it might get into the 20s.
Ooh.
Yes. Listen, on a college campus, that's shorts weather.
It is. It's shorts weather in downtown Madison, too. I saw a couple people running around earlier this week. So you're believing in Punxsutawney Phil and Jimmy the Groundhog. You're going all
no,
in.
No, I know it's going to go away. But even a couple days will be
little reprieve. Nice. We need a little reprieve. It's
just a
it's
reprieve
been cold.
From something. Well, the good news, if you want a reprieve, we might not have to vote anymore. So that's good. This is horrible. And this is something that I think, as Americans, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, we need to be making a big deal out of this.
Yeah.
You need to be paying attention. You need to be letting your representatives know this. The president is calling on Republicans to nationalize elections and take control of voting away from the states. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jamie. Republicans, big states' rights folks, correct?
As far as I knew, are we changing that? Because I'm confused on who's supposed to be. I don't know where we align anymore. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to believe, and I don't know who's for what. And it's all messed up. And I don't know what to do with this information anymore. I really don't. It's confusing.
I know. It's very
whiplashing.
It's tough. Well, the other day when we used the term of fiscally responsible Democrats, it's nothing. We're in the upside down.
We are.
So the president is justifying this by hammering on the more than disproven claims that there is widespread voter fraud.
Yeah.
If you still think that, you need to go back and do, as they love to say, do your own research.
Right.
Because voter fraud is less than 1% across this country.
Yes.
We thought yesterday after the show, because we had mentioned that this was the president had made a comment, and we said, oh, this is if he keeps mentioning it, it's going to be a big deal. And he is mentioning it, and we see what's happening in Georgia. And don't kid yourself to think that by grabbing all these ballots from the 2020 election and bringing them in, they are going to manufacture some kind of voter fraud, despite the fact that those ballots have been counted and audited multiple times. They will come up with something that will allow them to say, see, we need a national election. And if that is not worrisome to you, that this is one more step toward perceived, and I would say actual fascism, then you need to pay attention.
What I think is also interesting is you have to watch some of the low-lying moves that this administration has made. And they've made the news, but they've been a little under the radar with some of the bigger stories. And what I'm talking about is where they keep requesting states to hand over their voter roll information.
Right.
And that is low-level moves that this administration is potentially moving towards nationalizing these elections. And for anybody who doesn't know how this all started, we've got to go back to Monday. Because the president was on former deputy FBI director Dan Bongino's podcast. Remember when he was in the administration for a hot second?
Well, yeah.
Now he's back
to podcasting.
And
then he realized they weren't going to, because they weren't going to do what they said they were going to do. And he was like, I'm not qualified for this job.
It's a bridge too far for me, and I am done. I guess the bridge too far would have been accepting the nomination when you're not qualified, but it's fine. So Trump actually on Bongino's podcast said that Republicans should take over the voting in at least 15 places and that elections should be nationalized. Now, in case you're wondering how this all works, and because I know some of you are very educated, brilliant people, but little reminder, the
US, some of us are dolts, well, let's be honest.
That's why I read so much, because I don't want to be in that category.
I understand.
The U.S. Constitution actually gives states primary authority over elections, stating that the times, places, and manner of elections are set by state legislatures, with Congress allowing some limited oversight. Now, the Supreme Court has also consistently ruled that states control their own voter registration, election administrations, ballot counting, and fraud prevention, not the president. It's explicit in the Constitution and as well as the Supreme Court rulings, which is also fact and part of this equation. So when asked how elections should be nationalized, the White House provided, here's a big surprise, no specifics. Instead, they pointed to things like the SAVE Act and some other proposals which required voter ID, proof of citizenship, limits on mail voting, and bans on ballot harvesting. Trump's comments, though, on the heels of the Justice Department going into Georgia, I think is what should be most troubling. And we're even seeing it in Minneapolis, right? The lawsuits against Tim Walz and Jacob Fry and Attorney General Keith Ellison have little to do with the actual acts that are happening in Minneapolis. What they actually want, what Pam Bondi is requesting, is all of their internal paperwork. That's what she's requesting.
We'll make it all go away if you give us what we want.
Right.
Which, in layman's terms, is usually blackmail.
Yes.
But that's, again, that's just layman's terms.
Sure.
That is no indictment on the administration.
Right.
Wink, nudge, say no more.
So through all of these comments, Trump has been referencing this particular Georgia investigation, again, claiming without any evidence, which has all been debunked, by the way, and proven in court. It's all been proven in court that states he won were falsely reported as losses. And now he's also alleging corruption in vote counting. Now, these are, as you stated, this is like the Chatty Cathy doll where you pull the string and the same comments keep coming out of his mouth, right? Because we've been hearing these since 2020, six years later, Mr. President.
And it doesn't matter how many times his claims are proven false.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't either, it doesn't get through his thick skull, or they choose, I think it's that they just choose not to believe it because they have enough people who will buy into it.
Right.
It's becoming more and more frustrating every day. It's more and more frustrating to watch Congress and think to myself, where is the breaking point?
Right.
Because if you're a Republican elected official right now and you think this is a good idea, one day you might not be in power.
Right.
And even if you are going to stay in power, even if your party is going to win, let it win the right way.
Yeah.
Let it lose the right way. Go with the will of the people, which is what you are supposed to be serving, and you're not. And I don't understand. There's how many times have we pushed the goalpost back to say this is the point? This has to be the point. This has to be the point. And I think if this was in any other sort of business, man, this stuff wouldn't stand. We couldn't get away with that here. If you, wherever you work, you couldn't get away with telling lies to your boss nonstop. And let's remember, we are their bosses.
Mm-hmm.
We don't act like it anymore. We don't think like it anymore. But they do answer to us. Both sides answer to us. I don't care what administration is in there. We are their boss. And you don't have to like your boss. They don't have to respect us, but they do answer to us. And we've forgotten that. And we've allowed this administration to take on the role of all-knowing and all-powerful, and they are not.
And once you take elections away from the people and hand that specifically to the politicians, both sides, right? You're no longer protecting democracy at that point. You're not living by the Constitution, because I know that there's a lot of Republicans out there that want to hang their hat on the Constitution, Democrats as well, independents. When you're taking power away from the people, you are simply centralizing that power and you're managing it. And that is a road that we should not go down in this country. The Constitution was designed to protect from exactly doing that, because the forefathers came from a country where that was happening. And they wrote our Constitution specifically to allow that, to not allow that to happen. And all you're essentially doing is centralizing that power. And that is dangerous. It's dangerous when that happens.
And I blame us. I blame the citizens. Why are we not getting out to vote? We look at other countries and people wait hours and hours and hours to vote. Mm-hmm. And we say, boy, look at that. That's great. And then here we get very low voter turnout. We look at other countries where they have these sham elections, just like I think would be coming if these, if our elections were nationalized, just like these other countries. And we, both Republicans and Democrats, look at those elections and say, that's not right. They're not listening to the people, blah, blah, blah. How dense are we as a citizenry and how lazy that we will not get out to vote? And I don't care if you think, well, all politicians are crooked, or I don't have a politician that matches my personal needs 100%. If
you just hit a nerve for me.
We're going to miss it when it's gone, folks. And I'm not, you know,
we are.
I don't think I'm being hyperbolic. We are going to miss it when it's gone. And you're going to go, remember that time I didn't vote because, you know, a candidate laughed too weird for me, so I just stayed home.
Here's the thing that bothers me about that particular argument, and this is my little soapbox moment. The candidates are not your best friend. You are not going to coffee with these people. You are not vacationing with these people, lunching with these people, having phone chats with these people. You are not doing any of those things. Our job as voters is to pick the person who is going to uphold the values of the Constitution and do what is best for everybody in this country.
Everybody.
Everybody in this country. It is not our job to have a popularity contest. It is not our job to decide if this is the person I want to have lunch with every day, because that's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. So vote for the person who can do the job the best. That's the goal every election.
But that's why we're in the predicament we're in. The administration was able to con enough people to believe that they had their, that this administration would have their best interests at heart. And people believed it. And they bought into this illusion. And it tapped into feelings that they may have been ashamed of before. And now it's okay to have those feelings. And look, there's a lot of people who have those feelings, so I must not be wrong. And it didn't matter if people were qualified for the job. All that mattered was, oh, they think like I do.
Right. Yeah.
And I voted for a lot of people who don't think like I do, but it's like, I think they can get it done.
I grew up in South Dakota. My first elections were voting for people that I had to just choose were going to do the best job based on who I had to choose for, because I wasn't going to miss out on voting either. Yes, I kept all my stickers since the very first vote, but that's a conversation for another day. I do want to remind everybody, too. Thank you. I do want to remind everybody, too, that right now, Brian Stile is helping advance a bill called the MEGA Act, which would actually restrict voting by banning universal mail voting and also ranked choice voting, which has become another discussion in the state over the past few months. Federal courts have already blocked part of the president's March 2025 executive order that attempted to impose new federal election rules, including proof of citizenship requirements. And a federal judge ruled that the Constitution, boy, that pesky little word, assigns election authority to states and Congress. In other words, not the president of the United States. It's
seems
pretty
so
simple.
Easy, Jamie.
I mean, it's there in black and white. It's there in black and white.
Reading is not fundamental anymore.
It's not. It's 7:19 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
It's 7:22 right now. A chilly but nice start to the day. Dare I say that? It's clear. The sun's starting to come up in Madison, so we'll take what we can get.
Isn't it still 2 below 0?
Well, I'm inside, so I'm not walking around like the bundled up people outside. I understand my place.
You're like my dog. You see the sun and you think, oh, it's nice outside. I want to go outside all day.
Well, in Wisconsin, it's hard this time of year. You don't always see the sun some days. So.
I know. Listen, I'm the same. It's like, ooh, let's open all the blinds, get the place nice and bright, and then the other dog goes and lays in the sun like he's in Saint-Tropez.
Until he has to go outside. And he's like, no, bring me in right away.
No, he's the smart one. He knows he sunbathes in the house. The other one wants to go out. Yeah.
I love it. I love it.
Well, after just a short time, the government is reopened, which we can say is good news. But I think the bigger news in this and the better part of this is that there was a compromise reached that pulled out the DHS funding for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. But either way, the House did pass a roughly $1.2 trillion spending package that ended the partial government shutdown yesterday afternoon. It was cleared by a bipartisan vote, and this is pretty good news. So funding for the Pentagon, Education, Treasury, Labor, and State Departments are all funded through the end of the fiscal year. And as I said, 2 weeks, Jamie, before a DHS. So now we get to see inertia set into the Congress again as they try to figure something out. But this is good news. Let's be happy for something.
Of course. Of course. And what I find interesting about this, and it always is a little shocking when I actually see the voting numbers, because as much as we talk about the majority of the GOP shrinking, when you see the actual numbers, you realize how tight it is getting for Mike Johnson. 217 to 214 is what this bill passed by. So, he doesn't have a lot of room for error. So I don't know if he wants to upset any of his caucus members. Now, DHS, as you mentioned, will get that two-week extension. That will keep the department funded only through next week. And if lawmakers can't reach a deal by February 13th, get caucusing, Mike, because you don't have much time here.
Yeah.
DHS would actually shut down, which would also, and while you're thinking, oh, good, DHS shuts down, this is not good because remember, DHS also runs other departments, and that would impact TSA, the Coast Guard, Customs and Border Protection, the Secret Service, and also FEMA in case, by the way, there's any natural disasters, because we need that happening right now in this country.
Sure.
So Immigration and Customs Enforcement, however, would continue operating after receiving $75 billion, as we've mentioned, on this very program in separate funding under the previously passed big, beautiful bill. So don't you worry. You won't be able to fly, and you'll be standing in lines for 3 or 4 hours, but ICE will be able to roam the streets of Minneapolis or whatever town they decide to come to next.
Which then is all, again, part of, and man, me becoming a conspiracy theorist, even slightly, was never on my bingo card. I never thought, but then you look at it and you go, all right, let's play this out. And we play it out like we have with a lot of things with this administration, where you say, all right, this is great. We partially fund it. DHS will do it in 2 weeks. The main problem isn't with DHS. The problem is with ICE. Well, ICE is still going to be operating. So you hit the nail on the head, Jamie. God forbid there's a natural disaster. TSA shutting down. Now travel is impacted.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, you know what's coming up? Spring break is coming up. People don't want to be standing in line for hours and hours or not being able to fly because TSA is shut down. So people are getting mad. And then they say, look, we didn't want this to happen. We tried to have it funded back then. Who stopped it? The Democrats stopped it.
Right.
So the Democrats are causing you to not take your kids to Disney for spring break. All you college seniors who are going to fly down and do horrible things to each other for a week in Fort Lauderdale. Is that even still a place that people go? Probably not.
Maybe not.
I went
I
to
don't
Padre
know.
Island and we did horrible things. So
debauchery.
But it's all, yo, Jamie. Yes. Boy, now you got me thinking about debauchery, and I've lost my train of thought. I'm like, ooh, yes, that would be fun. No, my train of thought is it all kind of plays along.
Yeah.
So this 2 weeks, we've heard 2 weeks for everything. It's not Mike Johnson is not going to caucus hard.
No.
It's not going to be done in 2 weeks.
No.
And they're going to use it as another excuse to pin any sort of government problems on the Democrats.
Absolutely. And what I appreciate about this bill passing right now is the shutdown was relatively short, just coming off of the longest one in history. People are back at work who were impacted, and critical programs are opening again. And all of that very much matters. So at this particular point, we'll give a win to a win where it's deserved, right? Because this needed to happen. This fight, though, with immigration and DHS is going to be is very much unresolved. And what I really am looking to see now is whether the same level of Republican outrage holds once these headlines start to fade a little bit, because obviously we're a few weeks removed from Alex Pretty's death. We're a few weeks removed from Renee Good's death. And Republicans were just some Republicans. I won't give them all credit. Some of them were becoming just as outraged as the Democrats about what they were seeing. But those headlines fade and things start to change. And there's other stories about nationalizing elections. So does that give them some cover? Right. Because now that those headlines are changing and we're in this 2-week period, the government's back open. Does that outrage, was it real? Was it feigning? Or was it just for that moment in time because we're in the middle of a midterm election? That's where my mind goes with all of this.
Good question. I think with something like this, ICE is going to, unfortunately, they're going to keep screwing up.
Yes.
ICE will not leave the headlines. And I don't think people's outrage is going to diminish. So I think the pressure will stay on these Republicans who have been wavering a little bit. That's my hope anyway, because you know ICE is going to go into another city. They're still, they haven't pulled back at all in Minnesota.
Right.
There's reports of another gun being drawn by an ICE agent in the news yesterday. There's the pepper spraying and all of that. So I don't think that story is going to go away. The headline on it will change, but the story itself will be there, and the pressure on politicians is going to
remain. Hopefully their backbone doesn't fade like Mike Johnson's. That's all I'm saying. 729 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's 7:35 right now. Thank you for joining us this morning. Listening in Madison on WMDX or maybe in the La Crosse area on WLCX. We are glad that you are able to join us. Civic Media Mornings, Civic Media Radio Network. I actually can't remember what I said, but my name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'll remember. My name is Brian
Thank
Noonan.
You.
It is Civic Media Mornings. That's the name of the show for now. Maybe we change it someday down the road. Something a little catchier. But we are on the Civic Media Radio Network. That's not going to change. So there you go. Always interesting politics here in Wisconsin. That's an understatement, of course. But coming up, of course, we've got the Supreme Court elections in April. We've got the general election in November. And part of that general election is going to have a few constitutional amendments, ladies and gentlemen, that you get to shape the state.
Yes.
More than just electing a person. You get to shape the state for years and years to come. So there's a couple of amendments on the ballot that you're going to be asked to vote on. And they're kind of, at first blush, I was like, why do we? And I remember when they first started debating these. And I'm like, why do we really? Do you really need a constitutional amendment for this? But I guess we do. And that's cool. And you're going to get a chance to vote. And so there's also a third one that's possible. But let's talk about the first couple. Jamie, the first one is an amendment to allow worship during public emergencies. And again, I always have to say, read past the headline because you go, when did we stop letting people worship during? So what is this one all about?
Well, with this particular, this constitutional amendment, it would enshrine the ability to gather in places of worship, even during a state of emergency. And this is a measure that actually arose after Governor Tony Evers prohibited gatherings larger than 10 people inside churches during the COVID pandemic. And lawmakers are saying that it was needed to uphold the ability of people to go to places of worship when times are hard, as they were during the pandemic. And the assembly ultimately voted along party lines to pass this particular bill. Senate Republicans passed the measure largely along party lines with very little discussion. Not that that should surprise anybody either, on January 21st. So
I don't begrudge anyone their faith. I don't begrudge anyone their right to worship. That is that's part of the Constitution too. You have freedom of religion. The government can't tell you who to pray to, what to believe, any of that. I think there needs to be a line when public health is threatened. We saw the millions of people who died from COVID. This was not whether, and I'm not going to debate with you whether it was created in a lab or if we should
wear
masks.
That doesn't even matter
blah,
in
blah,
this
blah.
Argument.
It doesn't matter. But people, I know it doesn't matter. But does that ever stop people from bringing it up?
No, very true.
No. So let's get that out of the way. I think like with schools, did it do some harm? Yes, there was harm done. But for some, a small percentage of kids, it was actually better.
Yes.
But for as far as worship, and this is a personal belief, I think you can be just as spiritual in a quiet moment in your house as you can going to church. And if public health prohibits you from going to a building and meeting in a crowded room, I don't mean this as blasphemous, but take it the way you will. I don't think your God wants everybody getting sick and dying.
No.
I don't care what religion you follow, unless there's a religion I don't know about where God is a vengeful and hateful God and wants to strike people down with sickness.
Well, and here's what I'm going to say. Everybody practices the religion a little bit differently, right? And I know some very, very religious people, very spiritual, full of, with a lot of faith, who very rarely attend churches. But their religion and their faith is very important to them. And so I think it's a private, I think how you do it is it has to be held in private. And I think that if you have that true belief, it doesn't matter if you're in church or not. And who wants to get sick in that instance, right? If that's what it comes down to, if that's what it truly comes down to. But
I don't know. But somebody who had a hand in crafting this amendment who can help us is Wisconsin State Senator LaTanya Johnson. She joins us now to talk about this amendment and the other potential amendment to the Constitution that will be on the ballot November 3rd. Senator, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time today. We were just talking about this proposed amendment that would allow worship during public emergencies, and we're kind of confused as to why this became a thing. We know when it started, but what's going on with this?
It basically became a thing during the lockdown, during COVID. And the reason for that was the spread of COVID. We knew that having services in closed door settings helped to spread that disease, especially in things like worship service when you sing or when you communicate close to one another. We wanted to make sure that the disease didn't spread and cause harm to so many more people than we saw already here in Wisconsin.
Is this the type of law that in cases of COVID or public safety, is this the type of law that could really limit a future governor's ability to respond in a crisis if it's passed and voted on?
Yes, it could. That's exactly the purpose for this bill, is to make sure that regardless of who's in office, that they do not get the opportunity to install another law like the one that we just saw, to prevent that closed contact. And that's extremely dangerous, especially when it comes to public safety. Our job is to make sure that everyone is safe and protected. And, you know, that law during COVID, it went a long way to ensure that.
Well, Senator Johnson, the Republicans who voted for this make it seem like they're doing it just to protect people's right to worship, which people's right to worship was not under attack prior to this. What do you think, in your opinion, are the real underlying reasons for the Republicans backing this play?
I think it all had everything to do with the shutdown. They don't want to see government tell them what to do. They wanted to be able to have worship or do whatever they wanted to do during a national crisis. And that was just not something that Governor Evers or the Democrats were willing to allow to happen. We know that this state, as well as around the country, lost so many good people during COVID. And we lost those people due to no fault of their own. A lot of them had pre-existing conditions, and the spread of COVID helped accelerate that. So we wanted to make sure that everyone, regardless of where they were, had the opportunity to maintain safety. And that, unfortunately, resulted in us having to isolate in order to get that done.
We're talking with Senator LaTanya Johnson. She is a represents State Senate District Number 6. She's also the ranking member on the Joint Committee on Finance. One of the other amendments that we're looking at is this amendment aimed at preventing preferential treatment. And supporters of this amendment say that it's about ending discrimination and restoring merit-based systems. How does this particular proposal, Senator, intersect with some of the real economic inequalities, though, that we see in Wisconsin? And could banning that type of language affect any longstanding programs that we have currently in this state?
It most definitely could, because we know that there are disparities all across the state. And I'm sorry if you hear a squeaking in the background.
It's adorable.
I have four dogs.
Oh, my gosh.
I was just praying that they didn't bark. I didn't think about their squeaky toy.
It's adorable.
No, it's great.
It's great. I love it.
Because to be honest, Senator, I'm praying my dogs don't start barking as well.
So. Oh, yeah. I have a cat that's behind the this computer that's been trying to make his cameo appearance ever since I got on.
Well, we love that. We love pets.
Yes, no worries.
What we know is that Wisconsin is full of disparities, especially for minorities. And so this bill is detrimental to making those disparities even greater. So we know that Wisconsin's population is 81.32% white. And when you talk about public education and access to public loans and job opportunities, we know that minorities are at a significant disadvantage for no other reason other than the population size of our white counterparts. So when you look at things like, for example, Marquette School of Dentistry, their dental graduates, 68.8% white, 31.2% minority. When you look at things like UW-Madison's entrance admission, you're looking at 57.3% white, 42.7% minority. Now imagine what those numbers would look like if we didn't currently have programs that specifically target minorities to try and bridge that gap. Those disparities would be even larger. We see disparities among minorities in health, in education, in poverty, and in housing security. So, and these are things that haven't yet been fixed that have the potential to grow even larger simply because of the laws that we are implementing.
And do you believe, Senator, that it's one of those things where people are willing to vote against programs, not realizing that some of these programs down the line they may actually need, or that those programs, while you may not be eligible for them, they do benefit the state as a whole?
They do, because what people don't understand is diversity, equity, and inclusion is more than just about race or male or female. Mm-hmm. It's about providing a level of equity or equality and including all individuals and entities. We have counties around the state that have benefited from that program simply because of their poverty, or simply because of their smaller populations that allow them to apply for and receive additional services. And so when we talk about ridding our state of these very essential programs, a lot of the authors don't think about programs like that or how it can benefit their communities. And the reality is, rather than trying to ban these programs, we need to be trying to find fixes to eliminate the need for these programs. And we haven't gotten there yet.
Senator, I'm going to switch gears here with just a couple of minutes left, because I know that you have had many conversations over the years about Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake and the oversight there. And the federal court recently ended the oversight for both of those facilities. How significant is this milestone, given that the state was only in compliance with only one of the 50 reforms at one point in time when Evers took office? What safeguards should be in place as we move forward to monitor these two facilities?
So one of the obstacles that eliminating this will be an advantage to taxpayers is that it cost us $25 million to comply with those stipulations and in terms of settlements. I think the Evers administration they deserve a huge bow, because when they took over, Lincoln Hills was under a court decree, because the conditions were so horrible. You had kids who lost toes, security officers that were attacked. And
Senator,
hurt.
We're going to have to jump in because we are up upon the break, and I wish we had more time. And we'd love to bring you back at some point to talk more about Lincoln Hills. But 7:48 right now. Thank you so much for your time. We do appreciate it today. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Yes.
Here we go. 7:52 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. And Brian, I have to quickly, before I toss it over to you, apologize to the senator. The Senator LaTanya Johnson was our guest last segment. She is the senator from District 6. The brain.
Wow. I think this sentence, may be a sentence you need to sit out, Jamie.
Okay.
Senator
okay.
LaToya Johnson represents District 6 in the Wisconsin State Senate. There was that what you were wanting to get to?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. You're welcome. Had a moment in that last segment, if you were listening, where we ended the conversation because we were up on the break talking about Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake. And my brain kept trying to inverse them, and I was trying to stop it in real time, and it just became a problem. But we appreciate so much that the senator gave some time to us this morning. And we had some people over on the text line chiming in as well on some of the conversation we had with the senator. Before we get to our next topic, we'll kind of hit these quickly. Terry from Cross Plains, listening on WMDX, says while he doesn't agree with it, the amendment could prove to be beneficial if the president declares a state of emergency during an election. Of course, referring to the amendment to allow worship during public emergencies. Terry goes on to say that there are polling places inside churches and people would be able to go to the local church to vote. Tom in Hartford wondering if there's a vote on February 17th. Tom in Hartford, I love my research. I'll do some digging. Mark also says since measles is an airborne disease, churches could be an ideal vector for spreading it, with measles now popping up all over, which is a very good point. We do have
Gary and Madison, most any referendums proposed by Republicans are politically motivated and should be rejected. I think we can pretty much say that any referendum put forth by any politician is politically motivated. But
yes.
Gary,
thank
Madison,
you.
We do appreciate your text. Jamie, have you heard the term peel your wig back?
I have
Dom,
not.
Dom, I know you have.
But I have now.
I have not.
You have not heard peel your wig back?
Never.
And that's yo with a Y-O. Don't tell me I am the most street on this show, but I am. We all know it. We all know it. Peel your wig back. Is a slang term, kids, that usually refers to an action of violence or aggression, typically used in the context of physical assault. It implies a forceful and violent act that would cause someone's hairpiece or wig to come off of their head. It is often used in situations where someone is seeking revenge or retribution for a perceived wrongdoing, and then you get your wig peeled back. Well, it came to life in a boxing ring when Jarrell Big Baby Miller just showed everybody what getting his wig knocked back actually looked like. Jamie, I love this story, and I can't believe it happened the other day. We didn't talk about it yesterday. I played the diva and said, we must.
And you know, it's,
I peeled all your wigs back.
I love
when
this.
I said it was time to do this story.
So I guess this leads to the question as we talk about it. What's your most embarrassing moment that you've ever experienced? Like, do I really have to just pick one? I don't think we have enough time for me to go through all of my embarrassing moments, but if you'd like to chime in this morning,
one.
Yeah. If you'd like to chime in, 1-855-752-4842. That's 1-855-75-CIVIC. You can tell us your most embarrassing moment. I think the last, like 5 minutes of trying to talk with Senator LaTanya Johnson ranks right up there for me.
If we were going with your most current embarrassing moment, I would say yes. I actually worried about you. I thought you had like an aneurysm.
We almost had to go into the room and help you out.
And
there.
The Boyquarium did not move at all.
No, they didn't.
They were just like,
No.
It's like when you're watching a movie with a psycho killer and they just tilted their head and looked at you
It was fine. It was fine. She's fine. If she falls off the chair, then we have a problem. Brian, go. That was essentially what that was.
Yeah, that's how it works.
But the story about Big Baby Miller.
Big Baby.
Yeah.
Put some respect on his name.
Okay, all right. So he squared off against, I'm not a boxing fan, so folks, so I apologize. Kingsley Ibia at Madison Square Garden in New York City. This was on January 31st. The video of this is just bonkers.
It's hilarious.
Midway through the second round of what was actually a pretty dull fight between two men with a combined weight of 604 pounds, by the way.
This was more sumo than boxing. Wow. And both these guys are way past their prime.
Yeah, it was something. Miller took a shot to the head and his hair literally lifted off his head. He used his gloves to pull his hair back down, and then he took a short right and he essentially exposed what the world was hiding. It was, in fact, a toupee there on the top of his dome. But
imagine opening a soup can and leaving the lid on and it just flipped back. Or that scene in Tommy Boy. Did you ever see Tommy Boy, Boyquarium?
No, I have not. No.
Mm-mm. All right.
You know I haven't seen that.
My references are lost on these children.
Frank is way better for that.
There's a scene where, I'm going to spoil it. It's a 25-year-old movie. David Spade's hair flips back like this.
Yes.
It's almost like that picture of the president when his hair blew completely off.
Well, sometimes that happens. It's windy. It happens.
Does it? Only if you're doing weird comb overs or wearing a toupee. And then he threw the toupee out into the crowd.
Yes.
People, of course, made memes out of it. It's hilarious. The announcers went crazy. They're like, what's going on with his hair? Is Miller losing his hair? I've seen a lot in boxing, but I've never seen anything like this. I've heard about guys taking their hats off to show respect, but Miller has taken his hair off.
What was the best is if you watch the video, like the tape and the glue is still stuck to his head, though, that was keeping the toupee on.
It's so weird. And the thing that's lost in all of it, he still won the fight.
He still won the fight. Yes, he still won the fight.
By a split decision. Well, yeah, it's two fat old men slugging it out, and one's hair flies off.
It was like when Mike Tyson got back in the ring there for about 5 seconds a few months ago.
How do you think that's a good idea to wear your toupe into the ring?
I don't know. There was a news anchor back in South Dakota. He was completely bald. He went on about a 4-week vacation, came back with a full head of hair.
Oh.
Now you tell me how that happens.
I love those guys. I also love the guys who are gray, and then the next day their hair is dark like a Superman comic. Yeah. It's like, wait, is that navy blue or
nobody
black
will
on your
notice.
Hair?
Nobody will notice these small changes to appearance. Not at all. If you come tomorrow with a full head of hair, we're talking
I'm come
about
with
it.
A big fro.
You have to.
I'm just going to have my headphones sitting on top of this.
We're not ignoring
hair.
It. It's 7:59 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Thanks for being part of the program. Thanks again to Senator LaTanya Johnson. And thanks to our other guest, Seth Stern. And thanks mostly to you for listening and being part of the program. We will talk to you again tomorrow on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.